60s. And now it's time to head on over to the futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to Future Tuesday. This is Future in the studio.
In the house.
And Richard and Greg in the house.
In the house.
Yeah, glad to be back.
We have another report from those guys at 2:30 on the AWE conference. It's the Augmented World Expo.
Which Hello. We all went to last week.
Yeah, quite amazing. Another super Disneyland experience in the augmented worlds.
The holodeck is coming faster than we know.
Yes, and happy election Tuesday. Primaries
right.
are today.
Get out there and vote. I know you don't need to listen to...
Can
probably
we vote
already
in virtual reality?
Yeah, you can vote for virtual candidate.
You clicked on the wrong one.
Yeah. Yeah, voting will be very different when virtual reality becomes mainstream, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we only have half an hour for the news, then we have the augmented display. Then we have Karen Noe on. She is a New Jersey psychic. I know it's a little bit of a departure from us, who are usually very scientific oriented, but we've had a couple shows lately where we have touched on the other side stories. We had Sandy Stone on, who talked about doing
technology electronic, to talk with ghosts.
The electronic voice phenomenon.
That's right. Hearing sounds in the silence from another dimension.
Karen claims to be able to speak to hundreds of people on the, quote, other side, unquote.
Not all at the same time.
Wayne Dyer in particular, who she had a close affinity with in real life. So we'll see what that's all about. See, she's very popular on the East Coast. She's got a two-hour waiting list. I mean, 2 hour.
2 year.
Excuse me. I guess on the other side, time
two
is a little
years
different, too.
And 2 hours.
2 hours
it's
on the other
2 side.
It's
2 hours for walk-ins.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 2 hour wait is for the people on the other side if they're requesting an audience with somebody here.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
And then there are channelers.
All right.
That's the second hour. First hour, let's get some of our news through here. We've got a bunch of stories I want to share with you. One was that asteroid that was on course for Earth, we just spotted on Saturday, and it came down in Africa.
Just
a fireball
shows you.
Streaking across the sky above Botswana on
All
Saturday
the
night.
Science in the world, we can still barely spot an asteroid before it hits the planet.
Right. It was hurtling towards Earth at 10 miles a second. It looked like... The videos of it look incredible.
It's a ludicrous mode for the asteroid.
Yeah, ludicrous. I don't know. Is that the normal speed for an asteroid? Or
I don't know.
The video looks like a scene out of War of the Worlds.
It does, yeah.
Yes, the NASA video, which is from a farm in Botswana where the asteroid hit the ground.
Yeah, you'd see this big streak going across the sky and then a big behind a ball of light.
And it looks like a video from my youth in Las Vegas where the Chamber of Commerce was trying to encourage people to come to Las Vegas where they could see a nuclear star explode in the background. And that's when they were still doing above ground testing.
That's right. It was a grandstand event in Las Vegas to watch
charging emission.
The bombs
that's right. They were. They were taking people up to Angel Peak and telling them to put on their sunglasses and take a look.
Did you see that?
I did not see that, but I saw the footage because I did a documentary for the Rotary Club, so I checked it out.
Well, this one was 6 feet across, boulder-sized, and it burned up several miles above the Earth's surface.
Mm-hmm. This is called 2018 LA.
Yeah, so it was only the third asteroid discovered on impact trajectory.
So how big was it before it entered the atmosphere? That
6 feet is what
six
I've
feet.
Heard.
Yeah, 6 feet.
And
not
then when it landed, it was 6 feet?
No, it didn't land. It burned up in the atmosphere.
Oh, no, it hit the ground. It impacted the Earth.
Yeah, you sure?
I'm sure. This is the third time that they have had information about a previously unknown asteroid that hit the planet, and the second time where they predicted impact before it happened.
Okay, Mrs. Future.
And I watched the video, so I know the impact happened because it looks like a bomb going off.
I almost believe you.
Well.
I'll have to read it.
It's your link, Dr.
Future. Gotta check the
internet. I checked your links.
You did? I thought it was a broken link.
I found the correction.
You found the current one? Okay, good.
I went to the link.
Okay, well, who's being a pain in the asteroid here?
Yes.
Not me.
Well, they have NASA's Planetary Defense Team. Can you believe that? Planetary Defense Team.
Dun, da, da,
they
da.
Said, this real-world event allows us to exercise our capabilities and gives us some confidence on our impact prediction models are adequate to respond to the potential impact of a larger object. Mm-hmm. In other words, this is kind of training for larger ones.
So Lindsay they actually Johnson. Predicted it, but they didn't stop it. Mm-hmm. They just watched it. So what good is a prediction if all you're going to do is watch it?
So that's the Planetary Prediction Team.
Defense Team. Maybe prediction is part of defense.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. And they warn of asteroids that may pose a threat to the planet as their overall goal. But they did see it Saturday. So they gave us a little bit over. They couldn't do much. You know, if you know it, see it Saturday and it hits Monday. Mm. That's not a lot of time.
Yeah. But they did see it when it first started streaking across the sky. I saw the photos of several shots that show the streak traversing several stars. And you can tell it's moving really fast. Well, they definitely picked it out of the lineup, as it were.
So what's the difference between an asteroid hitting us and a meteor, do you think?
Well, I thought an asteroid was something from the asteroid belt. It's a particle of rocks that has come from the...
A meteor that comes from the asteroid belt.
Rocks between Mars and Jupiter, right? Isn't that where the asteroid belt is?
Yeah. Well, they're typically rocks, olivine, pyroxene, often contain iron and nickel.
Mm. It's a meteor once it's burning up.
And this does come from the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Well, there are hundreds of thousands of these things.
So the Oort cloud?
No, that's further
out.
That's way up. That's past the Pluto.
No, but the thing is, in this case then, if it came from the asteroid belt, it was an asteroid until it became a meteor. And now it's a hole in the ground.
Right. Well, a meteor is an asteroid that vaporizes upon entry into the Earth's atmosphere. And if a meteor survives the plunge through the atmosphere and lands on the surface...
That's a meteorite?
Then it's a meteorite.
Right.
Right. So this one is all of the above.
So asteroid 2018 LA was first discovered by NASA-funded Catalina Sky Survey, operated by the University of Arizona. NASA linked to video of this in their piece, which we have on our website. And the publisher said that it was from his father's South African farm.
The YouTube publisher, fellow who put this awesome video up for all to see. He's got his South African father's farm image. I guess they had surveillance cameras.
Yeah, so you can join this group. There's lots of amateur scanning the sky and scanning telescopes are out there, professional ones that are looking for objects that may be approaching us. And it's another fine way in which you can be a citizen scientist. Maybe you can save us from an asteroid strike.
All right. Well, you know, we have Daddy Bird on the line and we have 30 seconds before our break. Should we say hello?
Hey, Daddy Bird. Welcome to the Dr.
Hi,
Future Show.
How are you?
Good. Excellent.
Hey, I own a Subaru.
Yeah?
And they say that Subaru is a Japanese word for that Orion star cluster.
Oh, they do show the Orion star cluster on the Subaru cars, right? That's their design.
That's why that's on there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
Well, thank you for that. Nice little bit of trivia.
Is that why they say those asteroids come from the asteroid belt? Do they come out of that belt buckle and that?
No.
Maybe in a virtual reality world.
A few, occasionally, because our view of the asteroid belt probably circulates with the rest of the Milky Way.
Or the minds of Subaru designers.
Yeah, I'm a big Subaru fan.
Well, we're going to speed off to the commercials now. So.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Here we go. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. NASA's Dawn probe will be attempting to capture images from the dwarf planet Ceres coming right up. It'll begin making its final orbit around the dwarf planet this week. We'll be collecting new images. Now, this is an interesting little planet here. This is a dwarf planet. It's in the asteroid belt. It has been studied quite a bit by our Ceres Dawn probe, and the evidence suggests that there's a huge ocean underneath the surface, the frozen surface of this dwarf planet.
Wow.
A huge ocean, enough water to cover the Earth, really.
Right. Mm. More water than our planet on this little tiny dwarf planet.
Yeah, it's lots of water, very deep.
And doesn't Ceres also have like the two spooky eyes?
That's right. Those were analyzed more quickly. And, well, they were analyzed by the probe and suggests that those are collections of salt. Those are salt deposits on very bright reflective surfaces on the Ceres dwarf planet.
Okay.
So it'll begin orbiting closer. It's at about 300 miles out now. It'll get down to about 30 miles around Ceres, and we'll get a very close-up of the planet, and we'll be able to see what it actually looks like in detail. It wasn't easy to do. It took NASA about the calculation of 45,000 possible trajectories for Dawn to make its final approach towards Ceres. 45,000 different trajectories. And allowed the trajectory that they chose will allow the spacecraft to get the best observation of the planet ever.
Cool. I guess NASA must be using AI to figure out where to send their probes.
No doubt. And since Dawn began orbiting Ceres, it has really helped us understand it. We discovered things like an ice volcano. That shiny spot that I mentioned in the salt deposits. And the giant ocean is what we discovered. So we're going to look at those things a little bit more closely in the flyby. There's a possibility of organic material on the surface of the dwarf planet. They're using what they call visible and infrared mapping spectrometers. And that's what detected organic material in the northern hemisphere of Ceres in a crater there called Ernutet, E-R-N-U-T-E-T. And they think that these native molecules, these native organic molecules, may suggest chemical activity of some sort on the planet. And they also think that it has its own water cycle, that Ceres is observed to have an increasing amount of ice on the wall of the Juling crater, which they think might be a result of landslides that reveal ice on the planet.
Sort of like National Geographic for a dwarf planet.
Yeah, so it'd be pretty nice. So we'll get some great shots later. Also, I'm not going to go into great depth about that. On Thursday, keep an eye open for NASA's going to have a secret report revealed to the public on findings on Mars.
That's right. Big press release has gone out. Big secrecy. Curiosity has been discovering something on Mars that
we didn't know before.
And it could be life or it could be something else. We won't find out till Thursday.
Yeah.
That's so right.
Thing to look forward to Thursday. Okay. This thing. So we got a little bit of time here. Okay, I'm just going to touch on a couple other things here on the high-tech world. There was a Canadian judge that found a woman guilty of distracted driving by looking at her Apple Watch.
Yes, that was very interesting because most people probably feel like it's okay
to look at your watch,
scan your watch while you're driving. But this was so much more than the headline. When you read the story, this woman used the fact, she said she was checking her watch.
According to the cop, the woman checked her watch four times during one stop. Four times.
And the stop, there was a red light. And then the light turned green, and then the two people in front of this woman left.
Took off, and she didn't.
And she was still parked there, and the police officer who was behind her got out of his car, and she didn't look up until he was shining a light in and saying, "What are you up to?" Apparently, it took her all that time to check the time. Now, maybe she has need of glasses, in which case she shouldn't be driving anyway, but it seems like she was making up a bogus defense that she was checking the time.
They need a new app for the watch that says, "Hey, light turned green, get going."
Oh, yeah. Like Tim Cook has got the Apple Watch telling you that it's time to stand up and exercise. Well, the watch should probably also tell you that the light has turned green. It's time to drive.
You would hope, eh? You know, can't have this distracted driving.
Why not just have the watch engage the gas pedal for you?
Right.
Let it drive the car while you're at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then who are you going to sue if there's an accident?
Siri.
Right.
She told me to do it.
That's right.
Well, they're supposed to be improving Siri on the Apple Watch, too. That's another big announcement today.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I want to hear Siri argue for herself in court.
I'm sorry. I can't help you with that.
She can play both sides.
What's up with that?
That must have been Google.
Yeah, well, Google's in the news, too.
Oh, let's hear about it.
Yeah, a bunch of Google employees resigned in protest against the Pentagon contract.
Mm. Oh, yes, Project Maven, if you Twitter Project Maven, you'll find that Google is in big trouble because they've been secretly engaging in military contracts, hoping that they could open the door even further. And in their contract with the military, they stipulated that the military is not allowed to mention that Google is one of their contractors because they were so afraid of the PR, the bad PR, because Google supposedly used to, I don't know if they still do, had the mission statement for their company is don't be evil. And so apparently what they have contracted and will be doing for the government, for the Department of Defense until 2019, is they are developing artificial intelligence to help military drones pick their targets, survey their targets, recognize their
automatically,
targets.
They're using AI to speed up analysis of drone footage to automatically classify images of objects and people.
So here they are. Now, is this weaponizing drones or not? I guess the jury's still out on that. It's still too new. But is Google getting on that slippery slope of becoming evil?
Auto-classifying images.
Apparently, a bunch of their employees thought so. Because they resigned.
Well, the employees believe humans, not algorithms, should be responsible for sensitive and potentially lethal work. And that Google shouldn't be involved in military work at all.
Yeah, especially because they have so much influence and so much information and access. We do not want Uber Google overlords.
Well, historically, Google's promoted an open culture that encourages their employees to challenge and debate product decisions. But some employees feel that their leadership no longer is as attentive to their concerns, leaving them to face the fallout.
Yeah, well, especially once they start basically concocting a PR lie that omits their name from the contract and prevents their customer from saying that Google is developing the AI with them. That seems deceitful.
Yeah, well, it's deceitful enough for a dozen employees to quit.
Yeah.
You know, so that's,
and now those employees are being hired by the Pentagon.
I imagine that Google's point of view is that the big data that they possess can be licensed to third-party companies that could be servicing the government's requests for assistance with these kinds of projects. And they want to maintain a closer feedback loop and control with the end customer, which is the government, not have to go through third parties, which apparently are seeming to become quite irresponsible. Certainly the Cambridge Analytica and Facebook's experience with them show that these middlemen promise to do the right thing and then they don't. But if they're dealing directly with the customer being the government, then there's a showdown between what's ethically correct or not ethically correct between the supplier and the customer with no middleman to you run away and say, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to do it.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think that the furor was that Google was pretending that they weren't trying to open up more military contracts and their employees were calling them on it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they're just a big company that answers to stockholders. So they're going to take whatever means they need to continue to build customers and create revenue.
And it's sort of like if Facebook is being held to account, then Google needs to be held to account too.
Right. A lot of these little companies start off with ethics and then they just surrender to money.
In their defense, they have hosted several sessions to debate and discuss Project Maven with speakers who supported and opposed Maven and stressed the difficulty of drafting policy about ethical issues using machine learning. What's ethical about machine learning?
Yeah, but once they start going behind closed doors with their customer and developing software for drone surveillance, I think they've left the debate. They've left the public interest. They're taking matters into their own hands and saying, hey, it's up to us now. We're the elites who have to decide. And democracy doesn't work when people start thinking that they're some people are more equal than others and that the rest of the democracy doesn't need to participate in the debate. That's when it fails. That's when
What would you suggest?
I suggest more transparency, more inclusion, more democracy. Don't do spin control. Do accountability.
How about if they allow us to use that software for our drones?
There you go.
Sort things out.
There you go.
So we can better drop water balloons on the people that have bothered us.
We can better
cover
parties.
Well, if you have more people dropping water balloons, you also have more people interfering with your ability to drop water balloons. And you have more literacy in the entire culture.
I like to be able to choose different people in a crowd and and have the drone circle around them and make each person special for a drone shot, easily switch from person to person, stuff like that.
And give everybody individual privacy to block their own participation.
Yeah, they right. automatically obfuscate someone's face if yeah. they don't want to be in it.
It's called a slingshot.
Or you can
right.
volumetrically capture them.
Well, there's that. Right, that's a whole other story, which we'll cover in the second, and actually, in a few minutes.
We're getting volumetric really capture. Close here.
That replaces a lot of traditional photography right. in a very interesting way.
Let's just say, folks, there's a whole bunch more headlines that have not yet been explored on drfutureshow.com/links page, and we may or may not have any more time for them on this show, so check them out.
Yes, depends on how it goes with the psychic. So, now we go to all 2018 after the break, coming right up.
The Augmented Worlds Expo report coming up.
Dr. Future Show. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. In this half hour, we're mostly going to be talking about the 9th annual AWE USA conference, the world's number one AR, VR, XR...
Hardy har har.
Conference and expo at Santa Clara.
But first,
we have a caller who wanted to comment on the whole Google fiasco.
Hello, Steve from Morgan Hill.
Hey,
welcome
Steve.
Welcome to the show.
Can you hear me?
Now yes, that's I can better. Hear you. I had
you sound
to
a little
put
robotic,
you all the way
yeah.
up.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
That's all right.
So, I think Google should needs to be transparent, as you said. If they're going to sell, say, my information, I want to know what they're selling. I want to know exactly what they're saying to maybe, it's mostly the third-party advertisers, but I guess it could be Cambridge Analytica or whoever. And I want to know who they're selling it to and what they're saying. Mm. And if I don't like it, I should have the option of saying, no, I don't want you to say this, this, and this. Or give you transparency.
That's interesting. Maybe they should send us all an email every month and telling us where our data went.
Ooh, that's yeah. a great idea. Hey, if they can sell it, then they have to inform everybody who's affected. Kind of like the way credit bureaus have to inform you who they're sharing your data with.
Exactly. And so you could just log in. I mean, they could have a dashboard and say, we sold it to this person and this is what we, you know. And yeah, they might lose money because they're getting a lot of people say, one, I opt out. Two, I don't want to give you any of this information. And, well, you know what? They're just going to have to figure out another way to do it. But I don't want my information.
Yeah,
they
well,
get too much information.
Yeah, they do get a lot. And, hey, they could pay for it by giving us all a website where we could check what they're using our data for, and they can have personalized ads on that website.
There you go.
To pay for it all.
Or they could charge us for subscriptions for more data, kind of like 23andMe, yeah. right? There's the free version and there's the pay version.
Yeah, you could literally pay for, then they could give you more, like give you better search or give you something better or give you YouTube Red edition with no ads.
Right.
If you're willing to share all your data. But you know it, at least you decide. But right now, it's Google is strange because first they said do no evil. And then I've been working in tech pretty much my entire adult life. And out of the ecosystem of tech, everybody plays but Google. They're the most like closed loop company of all. Nobody really knows what's going on there, which is fine that they're insular because kind of geniuses over there start approaching on me. I kind of care.
yeah, sure. Sure. Do you think they're more secretive than Apple?
What about Apple?
I mean, because Apple has a reputation of being for somewhat secretive too. And I wonder how you.
It applies to Apple too, because they're the same way. They're pretty much everything's closed. Closed operating system, one appliance. And they don't really play in tech that much
mm-hmm.
with other players. No, that's kind of true with Apple and Google. And the other companies aren't that way. They're pretty open.
Right. All right, Steve. Well, thanks for the comment. Appreciate your call. We are going to start talking about the Augmented World Expo so that you get a little glimpse of all the
other
new
companies
tech coming down the pipe and the newbies who are getting their feet in the door. The future is going to be so different than even how it is now. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for your comments.
You're welcome.
No, you guys, Richard Cray and Greg Panos in the studio, you both spent 3 days at AWE.
Yes.
Now, these big guys, Apple and Google, did they have an influence very much on the future of...
Neither one of them had an exhibit booth.
That's
Neither
interesting.
Neither one of them
yeah.
was even there.
There was a few people giving talks from Google. I don't think anybody from Apple was giving a talk, but maybe. Hmm. But I did see some badges that said Google or Apple. Hmm. And I have some friends that used to work elsewhere, and now they're over there yeah. at Apple or Google.
Well, what struck me about this event was that it wasn't so much dominated by large companies, but by a lot of smaller
yeah,
companies.
That's what I like about this conference. It feeds the growing ecosystem, and it doesn't massage the big whales.
Yes. Now, for the uninitiated, how would you describe the content of this event?
Well, it's mostly surrounded around augmented reality, which is those are wearable devices that you can see through and see the world at all times.
And so like glasses that have a computer overlay.
Right. So it overlays information. It tracks the information spatially and places it over objects and keeps it registered as you move your head and move around. So the information windows and pop-ups are relative to what you're looking at. They're not in the way or way off to the side.
So they had a lot of headsets here, for
yeah,
example.
There were probably a dozen augmented reality versions of headsets. So some of them were virtual reality headsets that had cameras added to them, so you could sort of see out of the enclosed.
So there's still a projection, but they have cameras of the real world.
Yeah, it's kind of like VR with camera assist.
Right.
It's not the same as looking through a nice pair of clean glass yeah. with a simple overlay.
So that's the real world with computer assist.
Yeah, and then there are other ones that you wear, and they are like a glass or a little piece of glass that's sitting in front of your glasses, and they give you the information, and you're not hidden away in a dark space with a VR visor.
I guess Google Glass was one of the first augmented.
Yeah, Google Glass had the overlaid material and the camera and everything built in. The big one that was not at the show was what's called a Magic Leap.
Yes.
So they're coming out with one, which is a very novel design using all kinds of brand new optics and technology to enable a really good augmented reality.
Yeah, I've always thought of them as the 800-pound gorilla that wasn't in the room.
Yeah, well, they have investment right. from all the major companies like Google and, yeah. and a lot of the others, and lots of money. And everybody's been wondering, well, what are they doing with all that money? We haven't seen any products.
Billions of dollars.
Right? Yeah, they've seen official visual materials that the company has released, but only a few developers actually have their hands on the hardware now.
Those of you that haven't heard of Magic Leap, they offer a whole another level of sophistication in augmented reality. More dynamic interactivity with the physical world. Future's trying to show us something
Well, I
here.
Just have the full list of award winners in all the categories from their website.
Oh, right.
Thought that might be fun to
stimulate
the conversation.
Augmented Worlds Expo.
2018.com.
Yeah, right.
The Looking Glass
if you Google it,
one.
And they give away prizes.
Yeah.
So the prizes go to people that are doing very innovative projects and works with current technology or about to float new technology.
Let's get on to that. I just wanted to get clear about how Magic Leap is different from everybody else.
Well, they're different in their absence right now.
Right,
you hear about them. They're rumbling off in the distance, but nobody's seeing
anything. But the demos that we see are such that it looks like more realistic than everyone else, more 3D, more interactive dynamic.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
I've heard that their display looks really good. I've heard from some other people that it looks really good, but that's all they were really able to tell me.
Gotcha. Yeah. But then augmented reality generally is offering the same thing pretty much, right?
Well, what's interesting is the whole ecosystem and investment going into augmented reality and the prototype projects and the projects that are already released is a very vibrant, growing field right now, like virtual reality has been for the last few years. So they don't really need the big companies weighing in and legitimizing the growth and progression of this field and the evolution.
Because there's too much exciting stuff coming.
Yeah, just going to this conference and seeing how many people were there and how many little players were there, the aggregation of so many.
Yeah, it did kind of remind me of the early days of the microcomputing industry.
Right, there's excitement, there's a lot of grassroots development effort going on.
Yeah.
It doesn't need Google or Facebook to weigh in and validate it. It's a healthy industry progressing at a good clip without having to have the big investment model made. But clearly the big companies, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, will all be dominating the augmented reality industry in the future.
They're watching closely.
Yeah, and one of the reasons is because they've been gathering a lot of big data for a long time.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, augmented reality requires lots and lots of big data in order for it to work well out in the wild with real users and real people.
Now, why is that?
Because a lot of how it works has to do with overlaying information into the real world. So knowing things about the real world, where they're located visually, and being able to identify them using computer vision, and then to register where in the real world you're going to overlay a piece of information, is what's called 3D volumetric cloud sharing. Right.
That was a big theme at the show, a big overall theme, that in the not-too-distant future, that everyone will have devices in their phones, and the ubiquity of it will, everyone will capture, there'll be this collective volumetric capture that will be stored in the sky. There were companies and players that were trying to learn how to monetize that.
Sure, so, and the idea of like just crowdsourced objects everywhere.
Everything.
So every phone being used all the time, not to scan people necessarily, but to recognize objects and to transmit data about objects to this virtual simulation of reality
in
the
sky. That sounds like it could make everything clickable in
the
world.
But also scan the environment, though. I mean, create a metaverse of the world.
So wherever you go, if you're interested in something, you can get information on it just by looking at it, clicking, saying.
So the term that's being used is cloud anchors.
Cloud anchors.
So
they're GPS related to the environment.
Your device has a lot of different sensors, including GPS, which allows it to very finely understand where it's looking and where in the world and environment and space it's positioned. And a cloud anchor is something that's living out on the internet that when it somehow some intermediary recognition program discovers that you're in a particular place looking in a particular direction at a particular thing, if someone placed a cloud anchor on that thing in the past, it will go find the cloud anchor and say, well, this cloud anchor points to this piece of information.
Okay, so say if you're walking down the street and you see this beautiful flower,
right,
and you're wearing such a pair of AR glasses, what could your experience be?
Well, if someone has already marked the flower and cross-referenced it with the type of flower it is or the Wikipedia page for the flower, then you'll discover the anchor that they placed.
So you'll see whatever they put in there.
If they made it public,
Close-ups, maybe micro shots.
Yeah, and what they're counting on is users and people in the public will wander around and they'll be placing their own anchors all the time.
So people will be putting their own.
Yeah.
It's like a democratic Wikipedia.
Right. This is a beautiful thing. Why don't I mark this?
But if Google Earth tries to do that, don't they allow you to post stuff on?
Yeah, but not so easy. It's not really in your smartphone and just one click to do it. Trying to make it simple.
Interesting. Okay, we are talking to Greg Panos and Richard Cray on Augmented World Expo, what we saw there. We'll be back after the break. This is Dr. Future Show. Okay, welcome back to the show. Yes, we're talking about Augmented World Expo, and Greg was talking about how we can augment everyday reality. Walk down the street, look at a flower, get information on it. Amazing, and just amazing. Mm-hmm. But what about completely other world environments? What about something from the past? What about if you're studying history in some way, or you were interested in a certain person?
Well, there was a session at awe that the Walt Disney Archives presented. And this is a trend as well in archiving historical objects and places.
Yes.
And in this case, it was Walt Disney's office, his original office that was left in its state when he died. He had a working office and a show office with a door between. They went in and scanned the space to create the virtual space.
Did they scan the show office or the working office?
They scanned both offices, the office. And all of the objects that were in there, for example, his favorite zoetrope, his first zoetrope that he owned. So they scanned that, and you can pick it up. In virtual reality, yes. There was a piano in the show office that the Sherman brothers Richard Sherman would very often play. Walt Disney's favorite song was Feed the Birds, and he'd say, play it, boys, and they'd play, and so the sheet music is on the piano, and you can pick up the sheet music, and the music starts to play.
Really? Right? Just by picking it up?
Yeah. So I was in this session, and I asked them, did they scan his ashtrays? because
what did he smoke?
Well, at one point, the office was on display at Disneyland.
Get his hands on.
Yeah, at one point, the office was on display at Disneyland, both the working and the show office, and you could view it through glass in the lobby of Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln on Main Street. I very often would go in there. It's just the most fascinating thing to look at. He had all the scripts that he was reading when he died, all these little maquettes and different objects. He had a model of his jet that he had just bought for a corporate jet.
Really?
And that sort of thing. But I would count the ashtrays.
Yeah.
And there were 13 ashtrays.
In the working office?
In both offices.
In all, both offices.
Together.
He had them everywhere. Yeah,
that's right. It was okay to have ashtrays everywhere. In the
I mean, it's well known. Yeah. He died of lung cancer. He had
I think
to
they started to disappear one by one.
But I asked that question, and it turns out it wasn't such a dumb question. They said they had to scan them. They had to use other ways because a lot of them were made of glass, and so a scanning device doesn't pick that up. But they did scan a book called Smoking and You, which is one of the books on his bookshelf, which I think was a book that...
he didn't read, obviously.
We should ask him. It brings up the question is that Disney seems to have a lot of resources for developing this.
Well, funny, it's not available to the public. It was only shown at a special fan event in Japan one day, and they haven't...
So it's not like it's in Disneyland or anything?
No, it's nowhere. I mean, they haven't released it. I mean, I think at some point it'll be released, and you'll be able to experience it, but the whole idea...
I would hope so, but one of the points that the author was making, he was giving a tour of all of the different ways that augmented reality was developed through this project of trying to virtualize this real world office, and how every kind of object presented its own problems and its own ways of needing to be handled. So even though they had the Unity toolkit, there were a lot of tools that they didn't know how to use, and so they developed their own, and they had to develop ways of dealing with glass. They developed some kind of a surface treatment process where when something was too shiny for them to scan it, they would actually project dots onto it so that they could recognize the edges.
Yes, and it's continuing on into the studio archives, the sets. They were showed how they were scanning the Nautilus from the sketch of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And this is a big theme too,
scanning objects. Amazing worlds that Disney's explored.
Right.
But what about Disney himself? I mean, obviously he's interested in avatars and such himself, otherwise he wouldn't have done all these audio animatronics of the presidents.
Oh, he would be just crazy.
Didn't he make one of himself? Or I would say modern daytime, I would think he would. You could use the AIs for assembling some kind of synthetic Disney where he could...
You know, there's been a lot of discussion about that over the years.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Whether he would digitize himself and have a virtual version.
They thought he might have frozen himself.
Or so had his head frozen. Yeah, I mean, there's been a whole myth about his head.
Anybody that would be into such things, it would be him.
Well, from what I understand, that his will actually specified that an audio animatronic never be created of him.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know why that was.
It was
but
in the
that
will
was in
that there
the will.
Wasn't to be one?
That's
himself?
Right. And they have. They've never done that. I mean, they have Abraham Lincoln, but they don't have Walt Disney. But they do have a statue of Disney holding Mickey Mouse's hand in the middle of Disneyland. But
Well, it's kind of interesting how close the relationship is between animation of stories and animation of puppets, characters, and the 3D version of it, which, of course, is going more towards holodeck. Way more spooky, but it's the same process, really. It's an art of artifacts.
Well, the Smithsonian Museum is doing an archival project now.
They've been scanning like crazy.
With Intel, and they're scanning all of their art objects, and it's fascinating that in a virtual museum, you're not standing behind a rope. You can actually pick up the object, make it bigger, see the detail on it. I mean, you can throw it down. It's even if it breaks, it's not the real object.
Then all the historical information can be linked to it too. You just press an extra button and then a Wikipedia page pops up. And so all the discrete processes of having to go get some other system, bring up a Wikipedia page, type it in, find the right thing, and then begin reading it are all disobviated with single click once you have reference to a virtual.
To have that kind of information available. It's like having
virtual version.
Well, that's the theme. Yeah. The theme of this.
The best libraries in the world.
Crowdsourcing all of this information was a big theme at the event, that all of this will be
That's a good segue to the best VR award.
Right.
Let's see, which was?
Was Where Thoughts Go.
You guys both experienced that too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Where Thoughts Go.
Yeah, a young man, Lucas Risotto, is a Brazilian, and he created this virtual experience. You sit in an abstract world where there are orbs that are floating around. It looks like a ball with two eyes.
This is a 360 virtual reality world.
Right. They're floating in zero G around you in this abstract world, and it asks you a question. What was your first love?
Why did you first fall in love?
Why did you first fall in love? Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And you would reach out and touch one of the floating orbs, and you would hear someone else's answer to that question, which is pretty fascinating.
So this is a crowdsourcing interface that you've never seen
before. Big questions you've asked yourself, and you hear others' answers.
Artistic and soothing, and it was really a meditation, so that you sat with this question yourself, and they're very personal, intimate questions, and it's just you in this virtual environment, but you're getting other people's intimate responses, and so it's all kind of anonymized. It's anonymous.
The point is to evoke an emotional response. And then the next step is that you can actually answer the question and leave your answer in the orb and pick it up and then throw it off into space. It
becomes part of the cloud.
And then the next question was, how did you see yourself when you were a child when you would grow up as an adult? And so you listen to other people's answers of that and then leave your own. And we didn't get past chapter two, but evidently
the line was too long. They had a lot more questions.
Yeah, very popular.
Well, they were only letting people do that because the throughput. But evidently 20% of the people that went through the whole experience end up weeping by the end of it. So there's some sort of cathartic experience, and it resonated with people. So he won Best in Show for VR. He was quite a brilliant guy. I got to talk to him.
Yeah.
It's in the Oculus store now, too.
So yeah.
Anybody can go experience it.
What's it called again?
It's like five
it's
or six
Where
bucks.
Thoughts Go.
Where Thoughts Go. Mm-hmm. So you can download that. Does that work in the Oculus Go
Rift
environment?
Well, it's in the Rift right now.
The Rift.
And eventually the Oculus Go.
Because you have to pick things up.
And other platforms. Yeah. You can only use one hand to do it in the Rift.
Yeah, they could do it in the Go if they
got
it right.
They could point the beam at it and grab it.
Yeah. Another great thing that was at the show that really got me excited is they had a Lucite block, which was a true 3D display. You didn't have to wear glasses. It could just sit on a desk right in front of you.
Those are cool. Yeah. Who makes those?
It was made by a bunch of makers out of Brooklyn in New York called Looking Glass Factory.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got one that's about 6 inches by about 5 inches, and then they've got a much bigger one that they haven't shipped yet, but it's more expensive.
Yeah, is this anything like the piece we saw after the Maker Fest?
Yes, same
Maker
one.
Fair,
right.
Same
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's just a display. You hook it up like you hook up to a monitor.
And it's a clear glass cube, looks like a big piece of ice.
Yeah, well,
but it's three dimensional.
It's clear on five sides, and then the sixth side has a display that's married to the back of it.
So portable holographic displays.
Something like that, yeah. It's a little heavy to be portable, but it's super cool because you
luggable.
Don't, yeah, you don't have to wear glasses. It doesn't have to track your head.
Remember when the holographic displays had to be luggables?
You guys,
right. Rough time.
We have a phone call.
I had to carry a
couple
ice
minutes
block
left.
Around with you.
All right, who's calling?
Let's say hi to Karen Kelly. Hi, Karen Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Karen Noe.
Karen Noe, all right.
Hi, Karen Noe. Oh, you're our guest for the next hour.
Yeah, we bring you on after the news. Thanks for calling in. We're just getting a download on Awe 2018, which was Augmented World Expo here in Silicon Valley.
That's right. We're exploring lots of dimensions today. One of them is the augmented world, and the next hour we'll be exploring.
If you could hold on until just after the news in a few minutes, we would appreciate it.
Of course.
Thank you so much.
Great, great beginning.
All right. So, in conclusion, you guys, you got another minute.
Oh, I just wanted to say it was set into two parts. One was the playground.
Try these things.
There was a theatrical experience that combined augmented virtual reality actors, and also they had a ghost appear by using a Kinect to create a point cloud scan of the actress that would poke her out of the end.
It was a lot of fun. And they're going to be putting a lot of the talks online on YouTube. So they're very open.
If you want to see more about that, you can go to the Awe 2018's website. So thanks, folks, for listening to the first hour of Dr. Future Show. That is just a touch of what was going on with AWA.
It really redefines
reality as we know it.
Yeah.
It's very
fantasy
exciting.
And reality literally become
KCO Santa Cruz.